This is K-12 Tech Talk.
K-12 Tech Talk.
The podcast by K-12 Techs for K-12 Techs. Real conversations, real arguments, and real banter on trending K-12 technology topics and issues.
Live from the NTP studios, this is the K-12 Tech Talk podcast. I'm holding my microphone different tonight. See if you can tell a difference. I am Josh. With me, Mark. Stop with the faces. With me, as always, is Mark. He's got an attitude tonight.
I do not.
Chris, you can't talk yet. Oh. And now back from suspension and calling from the road and
suspension.
Whatever. Yeah, I remember you were suspended a week and then you called in last week. So you're back full time now. Chris.
It's good to be back.
Yeah. So real quick, I guess we need to address kind of the elephant in the room. There's been a little bit of hate mail come in.
Jumping right into this.
Was that even on the agenda? No, it was not. But it is important, and we need to clear the air.
He's so mad.
I'm not mad. Okay, the only other important thing to say is we do have a YouTube channel. Go find us, K-12 Tech Talk Podcast. Subscribe. So we need to clear the air about this hate mail that keeps coming in. It primarily addressed at me, which I can take it. I'm a big boy. Yeah. I got my big boy underwear on. I can take the hate mail.
Obviously.
But I will say... Let's just, you know, I've been accused of hating on Office 365 and not giving equal time to Office 365 users and features and issues and making Office 365 be felt like it is an important piece of technology in K-12 technology.
Do you even have your branding right? Isn't it called Microsoft 365 now?
They change it every other week. It's Intune, it's Azure, it's... Again, I'm not being negative. Don't send hate mail. So, I would like to take the next couple... this next segment for all of the positive things about Office 365 / Intune / Azure /
Microsoft 365 is what whatever it's called.
What it's called today. So please, can we
agree though that Teams is not on the list?
Correct. Teams is not on the list. Okay. It'll never be on the list.
Yeah, but I don't know that I'm gonna take the. I don't want to be with Josh tonight.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'm gonna say I think Teams
sucks.
Has been working okay for me.
So I'm. Gentlemen, I'm going to ask for the floor. Please mute yourselves, and I will outline the positive items and feature sets that go along with Microsoft 365, Office 365, Intune, Azure, whatever it's called now. Ready? Here we go.
You're on an island.
I'm done. That's it. Thank you for your time.
Wow. He started to redeem himself.
I told you I had jokes tonight, guys. I told you I had jokes.
So that was a bit. We're not actually going to address anything.
There was hate mail. No, that was
Josh
a bit.
Just, what Josh just said.
I doubled down on the hate mail.
Does not speak for all three of us.
Who was that listener that sent that? Do you remember?
Listener Christy? Michael.
Michael, I'm sorry. I'm not poking fun. I'm not. I'm really not trying. But I don't use Office 365.
I would like to quote some things, and because maybe
go for it. I can handle it.
Quote: Josh sort of scoffed at the idea that a district would be using Microsoft 365.
Not a sorta. I scoffed.
Oh,
wow.
And then he says, "I'll admit I was immediately turned off by this statement."
I turn a lot of people off.
You. You three run a K-12 podcast on all available K-12 technologies and topics, don't you?
You could argue professionally or not. Okay.
And then he listed off all kinds of valid
all the names.
I obviously don't think
very valid points.
All the names that Microsoft Office 365 has been called in the last 6 months.
No, but he did speak. And but so, well, there is some real talk in all of this, maybe. But we have talked about how we don't talk about like our servers. We don't talk about our Active Directory. We don't talk about group policy stuff. We don't talk about printer management. We don't talk about all the Microsoft things that we do in our school districts. Google tends to be the hot topic
and
between
the
two.
The better of the two worlds.
We've talked about that.
Well,
I think they're harder conversations to talk about on a podcast. Well, to break down what our group policy does or whatever.
It's an interesting thing, Chris, that you just brought up. That, like, you could run an entire school district on a full Microsoft stack, infrastructure, and collaboration suite.
Sure.
You have to, if you're going to do Google, you still have to have Microsoft services, no matter what.
No. You don't.
Okay.
You could be purely Chromebooks.
Well, I'm saying, okay, you have no servers in your environment. You have no Active Directory.
Yeah. I know a school district right now in Southern Missouri that has no Active Directory, no on-site file servers, has Windows 11 workstations, but they do the Google Directory authentication service.
Mm-hmm.
They do that, which I think they're crazy. So, I mean, it's possible to have workstations without Microsoft infrastructure.
You're just trying to tick off everybody tonight.
No.
Yeah.
Hey, it's what I do. And to my defense, I don't like to talk about things that I don't know about. And
there we go.
Yeah. So you are the expert in not
everything
Microsoft.
Else. Everything
Your
else.
Puffed up chest.
Right. You call me
pride.
Did you just call me fat? So when it comes to talking Office 365. We're not in that world. Speaking of me and my district, we're not in that world. So that's not something that, you know, when we're talking about a feature set in Google Workspace, it's on the top of my head because I'm in that all day, every day, all day long. I'm not in Office 365. So I guess what we need to do is fire Chris and Mark. We need to find someone that does Office 365.
Mark's the newest guy here.
Josh is the one getting all the hate now.
And Mark used to be a teacher. You're going to pick Mark the teacher over me?
Well, Mark brings clout. I'm sorry, Chris, but...
Chris, you, me? Let's get rid of him.
Yeah.
Please.
I've never gotten hate emails. And I don't believe Mark has.
Yeah, no. that's an interesting point.
Hey, hate mail is still a listener.
And it's not hate. By the way, Michael, I didn't read this and think that you're hating on us.
No, he's right.
There's a couple sentences there that aren't, you know, kind of hurt, but.
Well, we've talked about this, right? We don't have enough experience with Office 365. There are so many school districts out there that do this. We do need to start to branch out. Did you just say three?
I did.
I'll put it this way.
Michael and two others.
I applaud school districts that use Office 365. I think it's a perfectly fine collaboration suite. And I'm jealous of a school district that has an entire environment that is built off of the Office 365 because it works very, very well together. We happen
Teams.
To be a Google district, except Teams. Teams, I can't. But
and that's been picked on too, that people love Teams. That's been picked on as well.
Yeah. We got hate mail over that too.
Hey, the biggest sentence in his email though, that I don't, and again, I can't speak to it well because he calls it a misconception, is about Microsoft, that Windows Microsoft devices and device management is more expensive. He thinks that's a misconception, and if that's a misconception, it is a misconception because I think Google is cheaper. I think Chromebooks are cheaper. Like that's an interesting
thing
he's putting out there that I can't speak well to it.
I think it would come down to in what aspect, because you're still buying, you know, you've got to buy the Google management license. Well, if you're full stack Microsoft and you still have on-prem services, and maybe I'm dating myself here and showing my age, but you know, you with Microsoft devices and on-site file servers, you still have to worry about CALs. And if you're running any sort of server, data center infrastructure, SQL, stuff like that, you've got to worry about CALs with that. So some of those license items tick up pretty quickly. But again, that's not to say Google doesn't have the same thing. You still have to buy the Google management license, which is what, $25, $28 a seat if you're able to negotiate that. So there's pros and cons to each. And you know, most of what I'm saying is tongue in cheek. I don't think Microsoft is bad at what they do, because God, like 95% of business runs on it. And, you know, there is a use case for it. It's just, we use Google because that's what we've always done. They're better. And it would be difficult for us to entertain that switch. Something drastic would have to change with Google for us to entertain the switch. Purely from a device standpoint, from the device standpoint in student hands, because we wouldn't continue to buy Chromebooks and pay for Google management if the idea was to sit, quote unquote, save money by going with full stack Microsoft. You know, what device are you going to put in the kids' hands at that point? Are you putting Windows 11 laptops? The management piece for that, to me, troubleshooting piece and just more things to go wrong with Windows operating system, just exponentially gets higher the amount of time that my department would spend on that. And again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's case studies out there. Maybe Michael will enlighten us.
Bring it on, Michael.
It just, from my perspective, from the outsider's view, it would be a tough sell to make that.
Well, Michael.
But I think that's just it, right? It's very hard for us to be on the outside, or basically we're 1 foot into Microsoft Office environment. And so it's very hard for us to appreciate the benefits of that one. I think that whatever your collaboration suite is, whether you're Office 365 or Google, you got to go full into it.
Yeah.
And you're going to see the benefits of both. And
And as with almost everything else, the right solution is what's right for you. You know, like, we joke around about specifically this being Google being the solution, yada, yada, yada. But honestly, that's what fits for us. And Michael's solution clearly is Microsoft and Office 365, Microsoft 365 Intune. That's what fits for him. And there's not a one size fits all, one solution fits all type solution out.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about Apple and iPads like in this. I mean, there's three players here.
Oh, Josh, should we move on here?
I think we should move on. Yeah, let's talk about managed methods. Or actually, Chris, where are we going to be in early May, April 30, May 1?
We're going to DC, boys.
Yeah.
We're going to go to the A4L Summit. Really cool thing we're going to get to do. We're going to get to do the podcast there, hopefully get some good interviews going on, talk about their interoperability, privacy and security that A4L is all about, breaking down the silos of how data works between learners to college to workforce to retirement. I'm excited.
And we're going to meet our friend or see our friend. I mean, he's Mark's friend, but any friend of Mark's is a friend of mine, Steve Smith. So we're excited to see him. So if you want to learn more about A4L or the Student Data Privacy Consortium and the wonderful work, the hard work that Steve's been doing and now is dedicating to now that he's left his school and is full-time with A4L, check out the A4L conference, April 30 through the morning of May 2nd, right?
Yep.
In Arlington, DC area. Chris, I had a piece of hate mail about you. Since we're on this hate mail.
Did you write it?
No, it's from James, listener James. he's tired of you saying a proud sponsor of the K-12 Tech Talk podcast whenever you talk about advertisers, because
Managed Methods, a proud sponsor of the K-12 Tech Talk podcast. They can help you with your Google and Microsoft cybersecurity and safety.
He said,
I hear
it's,
you, James.
It's just redundant. He knows what podcast he's listening to. Mark.
I think it gets in your head and you think about us more.
It's annoying. Mark, have you made it down to the newsroom yet?
Yeah, it's a quick one today. So
I don't.
You want me to change my background so it looks like I'm in the newsroom here? There we go. Does that make you happy?
Yes. Now you're in the newsroom.
Okay. Those of us who get the MS Ice Hack alerts or CISA.
Do you get that magazine? The CISA alerts magazine. It comes out bi-weekly.
No, I don't. I'll sign you up.
It's a great magazine.
Well, if you have been paying attention, you would have known that there was an alert back in, I want to say January, from CISA about Avanti products. Avanti has a number of infrastructure products, and CISA had said, hey, there's some vulnerabilities you really need to get locked up. You never want to be the guy that missed the alert from CISA or saw that and didn't act on it, and then all of a sudden you get breached. Well, CISA probably should have read their own message, because unfortunately,
Mark,
they got breached by the Avanti alert or the Avanti vulnerability.
Now so we're gonna get hate mail from CISA.
Yeah, sorry about that one. So they did have a compromise. Sorry, hold on a second.
Lack of professionalism.
Oh my gosh, put it on speakerphone. You got to answer it in front of the class.
Is this Mark's mom?
Sorry, I'll be right out.
It doesn't sound like Mark's mom. Nope.
Now my pizza's here. I'll be right back.
What? We don't know what the news is, Mark. You're the news guy.
Oh my God. So, yeah, so this is a thing. They were breached. A couple systems, a couple public-facing systems went offline. I guess it was late last week, and then the news started leaking out or coming out that they were hit with the Avanti, one of these Avanti breaches. So one thing that I did find today, about 4 hours ago, this is, we're recording on the evening of March 21st, there is a new Fortinet EMS client vulnerability. I think it's ranking at like a 9.6 on the scale. So if you use Fortinet's EMS product or EMS client, get that patch. That's our new patch, our new catchphrase, Chris. I don't know, you weren't here the last couple of weeks. Our new catchphrase is patch your crap.
Oh, I've heard you say that.
Yeah, so patch your crap if you've got Fortinet EMS.
Fortinet. You can email Fortinet Podcast at Fortinet.com to learn more about Fortinet products and services.
Hitting all the sponsors. Let's see. Compromise systems include, for this is a thing, were Infrastructure Protection Gateway and a Chemical Security Assessment
Mark's
tool.
Back.
Mark is back in the newsroom.
With a pepperoni on his lips.
Pause that part, right?
No, that's staying in 100% because we kept going. We kept going. We were talking to CISA and then the new Fortinet vulnerability that was released this afternoon.
And Avanti, 100%. they sing that song, "So Wake Me Up When It's All Over."
Okay.
All right. What else you got, Mark? Anything else news-wise?
Nothing on the news. Want to switch the listener post?
Yeah, go for it.
So this is on Reddit. And it was a post, I was really interested by this, but really interested by the comments mostly. What are your thoughts on the future of VR in the classroom? The poster says, years ago, we borrowed a Google Expeditions kit a few times. It was genuinely engaging experience for students and staff. Definitely not an everyday thing, but I was excited to see how the tech evolved because a bunch of phones and VR goggles was a little too much to manage. Then COVID happened and the thought of sharing devices went out the window for a while. Expeditions was axed. Now AI is all the rage in K-12, and you don't hear much about VR and AR. So, what are your thoughts? What's the future of virtual reality in K-12?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So we got to borrow some of the Google Expeditions stuff. Let's see, Jackson was in sixth grade, so that would have been 6 years ago. He was in seventh grade. 6 or 7 years ago, we had someone come on site with a bunch of hardware from Google, and we got to play with Google Expedition stuff. It was really cool for an hour. And it was kind of one of those things, okay, if we buy into this and we do this Google Expedition stuff, is it worth buying a set for each building? Is it worth buying multiple sets? Because is there enough content to keep this engaging and keep it going with lesson plans? Or is this a one-time hit, you know, when we're studying the solar system, pull up the AR stuff for the solar system where you can expand the moon and then Saturn and see its rings and stuff like that. Super cool stuff. and really neat, but I kind of wonder how quickly that shine would have worn off. And I think probably pretty quickly. But that post is right, man. You really, one, COVID, I think, killed most of that. And then AI has taken over the spotlight. Chris, what do you think? I have a funny VR story that I'll tell maybe, but Chris, what do you think?
I can think of the years ago, we have TSIs, those tech support interns, and I did some stuff with them playing with Google Cardboard.
Yeah.
That was super cool, and it was like, you know, you can make a VR headset for dirt cheap.
Yep.
And we even bought like we bought a more professional set, and we bought like a set of Google Cardboard that we had available too. And always kind of the thing that was a little bit of a showstopper for us was it was always like for a phone or for Android. It was not for a Chromebook or a Windows PC. Like it was always for devices or it was a custom device. It never hit like this makes sense just to be installed on stuff that we already have. So those Google Cardboards didn't get used and those nice headsets didn't get used. And I think we had it this year where like a group came in to show some kids VR stuff. And it was the whole thing again, like they were needing special access to get to this website and they're bringing their own equipment that wasn't going to work well in our network. It didn't get over it didn't become like mainstream in school. It was like the one trick pony thing you're talking about where it's cool for a day, whatever. And then,
yeah,
but it wasn't made into such a thing that was easy to sustain.
No. And if I remember right, the Google Expedition, their recommended hardware was like some TP-Link wireless router that really wasn't connected to your network because you had like a teacher device that you selected the Expedition from, and then all of the student devices connected to it. So it was better off not on your school Wi-Fi, but on this little home Wi-Fi router. Like that's a problem. Mark, what do you think?
I actually thought the top comment on here, which was just posted a little while ago, was perfect. It just says it's a solution looking for a problem.
Yeah. Right?
So there was really cool tech. And they came up with a way to kind of package it together in classroom. But it wasn't necessarily something that was scratching an itch. And that's the kind of technology I think that grabs on a lot faster in a classroom is you're solving a problem, whereas VR was the engagement factor was huge, and then you kind of went back to the day-to-day stuff. I'm seeing the same with people who have used the Apple VR that's been out for a few weeks now, and people are starting to say, okay, I thought I was going to use this for work. It's not there yet, or it's too heavy, all that kind of stuff. It's so much easier just to take out a laptop or a phone and work on that. The entertainment piece of Apple VR is still, that's very, very strong. But entertainment is very different. Entertainment and engagement is, there's a piece for that in a classroom and in school, but it's not taking off the way that we thought it would. So
Mark, do you like your Apple VR, Mark?
You know, it hasn't come in the mail yet. Hmm. Probably because I haven't bought it. But you know, I will say the best comment on this post was somebody saying, I don't know, I'm in an elementary and kids puke on the carpet enough without having VR expedite the process.
I was going to say, I don't know that putting on a VR headset and looking at a mountain in 3D like helps a kid in social studies class.
I don't know. If you're, Mark, from a teacher's perspective, help us here. If you taught third grade, right?
Mark was a teacher?
Third through fifth, yeah.
What, so social studies or math?
All subjects. I was a classroom teacher.
If you were teaching like a world history class for pick one of your grade levels, and you were talking about one of the, you know, the Chinese empires and the Chinese terracotta warriors, I'm sure it was worth it to, if Google Expedition had an instance of the Terracotta Warrior Museum, it was worth it to do that, right?
Yeah, I think there's plenty of times when you've traveled someplace where you've seen pictures of it and then all of a sudden you see it in real life, you're like, wow, this is not what I expected, or it's so much larger than I expected. And that's what, you know, those VR things can do with the, with like Expeditions was great about, you know, being able to stand right below the Eiffel Tower and just see how large it was, or travel to the Terracotta Warriors.
You say it like that too. It's almost the whole, you know, we try to gamify things.
Yeah. Yeah.
What you just said about Apple VR being for entertainment, that, I mean, I guess that's kind of the principle of what we're saying with this too. Like, make it's it cool, make it a cool it's engaging. Experience.
Yeah. 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 It's engaging. And in that, definitely, you know, that time when you're going to bust those things out in a classroom, you know, that the kids are going to be super engaged and excited about the lesson. And that is a huge part of education. It has to be a part of education, that you need kids to be excited about this stuff. Is it going to be like, all right, it's Tuesday, take out your VR headsets? No.
Yeah.
No, it's not there yet.
Right.
And I also, I think, yeah.
More of a enrichment item versus a like an introductory to a problem or introductory to a theory type tool.
Well, and I think the last couple of years of COVID has taught us, like, we don't want a school to be where you just stare at a screen, and VR just goes deep into that, where you're very isolated staring at headsets. So no, we can do that at home.
Yeah. So, funny VR story. I've got to be careful and protect the innocent in this story. So there was, for a period of time, and I think it's still on, because I saw a commercial for this not long ago. There is a baseball VR that universities use, Major League Baseball teams use for like batting practice and stuff. And it's, I can't remember the name of it, but I saw a commercial for it a couple days ago. A couple years ago, a district that I know was getting the hard sell from a representative from this company about, oh, it's going to make your baseball team so much better, blah, 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 blah. A district down the road got it. They're able to do batting practice off season because they bought 10 of these things and they sent them home with their baseball players. They're able to do batting practice almost all year long, and they've gotten so much better. They're now a state contender, blah, 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 blah. So the district started doing some research into them, and like, man, these are running off of what was MetaQuest, the Facebook's VR thing. And the more they got looking at it, they're like, man, we can't, like, you have to have a Facebook account or a MetaQuest account to run these things. So there's no like parental controls filtering built into that at the time. So really the only way to kind of protect it from pornography was to have it on a school network. So at the time, this district's like, they were pumping the brakes hard. The baseball coach was not real pleased. He was wanting it bad. But the district's like, we need to see how this goes with other districts before we really buy into this. Because it wasn't cheap. And you're introducing all of these risks, potentially. I mean, the big one is porn. So about a year later, they were talking to their neighboring district that had bought this, about this tool, about this VR baseball tool. And the district's like, yeah, we had to get rid of it. We stopped using it. Like, why? What happened? And they're like, we couldn't keep kids from watching porn with the VR headsets. So seriously, so for as cool as like Expeditions is and the use case that Expeditions has, there are negatives and detriments to the, especially like MetaQuest, introducing a MetaQuest type thing into a school environment would be very, very difficult to justify, let alone from the privacy standpoint. I just took it off the rails, didn't I?
Yep.
Sure did.
All right.
How is this related to baseball?
It was the baseball VR thing. That's why they bought it. They wanted their baseball team to be really, really good.
Okay.
Come on.
I think there are a couple of applications though that VR and AR, augmented reality, can have, mainly at the upper levels with like simulations, to your point.
Absolutely.
Right? Simulations, hospital simulations, those kinds of things where students are in the environment, real world.
That makes
a lot of sense.
We've had discussions about anatomy and physiology classes. There's a anatomy, I can't think of the name of it. It's like a table. Like a almost like a smart board, but it's a table, and it's anatomy and fit. Like you're doing an autopsy, for lack of a better term, for anatomy and physiology classes. That
I used to play a game on Wii that was like that. And you were like,
I think it's a little bit better than that.
Completely accurate.
So yeah, there are use cases for it, but
Wii
I think
Surgeon, I think was the name.
Yeah.
Would make
Well, I mean, look, AR, VR, some of the dissection yeah. applications, like, why not go through dozens and dozens of frogs every year when you can just, you know, use a virtual reality thing?
PETA would be happy.
Yeah. But every student needs to go through the smell
yes,
of
I agree.
Formaldehyde and
baby yeah. pig or frog. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a seal growing up in high school.
You had a pet seal?
No. Well, I mean, it wasn't a pet. We dissected it.
Oh.
Yeah. It washed up on shore. Grew up on the coast of Maine. So it washed up and then someone donated it to the high school and we dissected it.
How big was it?
Oh, a seal.
We don't have seals in Missouri. Like, give me a reference.
It's from a rose.
That's really good, Mark.
It's like a, I mean, it's going to sound really bad. It's like the size of a dog.
Really?
And they sound like dogs and they bark and yeah.
Was it a dog?
I gotta go make a call.
That sounds more like a Boston thing. Somebody hit a dog.
Was it a Boston Terrier?
Somebody hit a dog and dropped it off at school.
In Mark's school.
And they're like, here, it's a seal.
Why does it have fur?
My childhood is ruined.
You dissected a dog.
Oh,
and
wow.
That is why we should be investing in VR and AR.
Here, kids, dissect this seal. Why does it have fur? Do we have anything else before we ruin our last sponsor?
Extreme Networks, our proud sponsor of the K-12 Tech Talk podcast. Email dmayer@extremenetworks.com.
Well, this has been an episode. I gotta
correct something.
Okay.
Seals have fur.
Oh, they do? They're mammals?
Yes.
Hmm.
A seal was a fish?
I guess that is a dumb statement. But I thought that skin was like a leathery
thick fur. Again, I could have just dissected a dog. I'm
doing the whole thing. Don't make fun of us, Mark. We don't have seals in Missouri.
Yeah, man.
You don't have armadillos in your town. So
that's correct. That's correct.
Don't come at us with I dissected a seal, you idiots.
Don't do that, Mark.
Rude. Chris, do you want to introduce the interview with Absolute, if Absolute even wants to still be on with us now after about dissection talk?
Absolute has been hanging out with us. This is the sixth week hanging out with Absolute, and I got to hang out with Oliver Schmidt over at Absolute at the Midwest Tech Talk Security Symposium, whenever that was, last week or so, right? They did the kickoff. O. Schmidt is who you can, Oliver Schmidt. His email address is oschmidt is who you can email if you want to get a demo, if you want to get going with Absolute, to check them out more. But I hung out with Pat and Warren at Absolute. Basically, this is what we like doing. When we hang out with sponsors over the course of 6 weeks, we tend to like that sixth week to be an interview so that they can clear the air of anything that we've not spoken correctly of with Absolute. And I will tell you, this is a little bit, I learned things. So I sat through an Absolute demo, and then I did this conversation with them, and I have a good understanding of what Absolute can do for you. The interview is worth your while to hang on to if you're looking at Windows management, including like theft stuff, including social security scanning, of your fleet, of what files are out and about. They can help you with your Chromebook management as well. So we're going to post this interview, and then on K-12 Tech Pro, I'm going to post the recording of the demo that I did. I told them I would take the hit. We all hate sitting through demos. So I sat through the demo, and I'm telling you, it's worth sitting through. So if you want to hang out with Absolute and me through a demo, we're going to post that thing on Pro, because I hope that I answered some, I hope that I asked some questions through the demo that would be on your mind as well if you were sitting through that. So you don't have to schedule that demo. You can just hang out with me and Absolute and watch that pre-recorded video. But here's the interview.
All right, so I am hanging out with Warren and Pat of Absolute. I know you guys are used to me talking about Oliver. We got to hang out with Oliver over at the Midwest Tech Talk Security Symposium. Absolute hosted the kickoff event, and I actually tried to get the entire room to remember his email address. We all yelled "Oh Schmidt" together, and it was a good time. But we don't get that today. We have Warren and Pat. How are you guys doing today?
Really excellent.
Thank you. I did speak with Oliver after the event. It's his first kind of D-grade celebrity status that he hit. So it's come up more than once, and we're hoping it's not going to his head too much, but appreciate that.
That's been one of those jokes that I think he likes it, but I can't really tell if he likes it. It's his parents'
fault. If he doesn't, it's probably a little better. If it's a little annoying, it makes it just a little better.
I've enjoyed getting, well, there's two Olivers at Absolute that I've gotten to talk to, as we've had the sponsorship partnership together, but I've enjoyed talking to Oliver Schmidt, quite a bit through this. Would you guys, talk a little bit about yourselves, and before we even talk about Absolute, really, talk about yourselves and then what brought you to Absolute?
Sure. I'll start, Chris. My name is Warren Young. I now run education for North America, K-12 and our education customers. I'm a longtime Absoluter. I know we're not on camera here, but I was here since I had hair like you, Chris, but I clearly don't have that anymore. So I'm 20 plus years here at Absolute. I've been here really since the inception of the organization. And have kind of run through the gamut of you know, quote unquote sales jobs within Absolute. I was you know, kind of inside in Vancouver and then traveled through kind of the southwest of the U.S. I've then moved into some management roles, and now I'm running the country just specifically for education. I've worked with a lot of different organizations and types of organizations, but have focused primarily on. I'm K-12 for those years. And okay. It's been an interesting history for me because I've seen really the inception of the one-to-one program, you know, back when devices were, you know, $1,100 and people trying to find out how to do that, to, you know, Maine taking it statewide, to the inception of the Chromebook, to PC prices dropping. It's been a very interesting journey for me. iPads coming in, all of that to watch technology change and how students have been using technology and organizations, K-12 organizations over the years. So it's been an interesting run for me.
Awesome. Pat?
Very good. Morning. I am Pat Nuri. I am the sales engineer for Absolute, and I've been with Absolute for just over 10 years. I just crossed that mark recently. And I came from a long line of endpoint management solutions that I work for with various companies. But what brought me to Absolute, and we'll talk about this, is just some of the uniqueness that it actually brings, and uniqueness that is unparalleled in the industry, especially for helping in some of the things that we'll talk about today.
Awesome. And I think this episode's going to come out, and it's going to be like our sixth episode with Absolute. And we always like to do these follow-up interviews, because Josh and I, Mark never fumbles the ball, but Josh and I sometimes fumble the ball on when we're talking about a service or a product or a company. Sometimes we misspeak. Sometimes we get it absolutely right. But would you clear up? That's kind of the point of this episode. We want to make sure that we've told our listeners about Absolute correctly. Warren, would you just talk about Absolute in a nutshell? What is it? What does it do for K-12?
Sure, Chris. And we're going to focus a little bit more on the technical side. And that's why we brought Pat to the table today. And I'll edify him a bit. Pat's been, as you said, 10 years in the organization and knows this product inside and out. So, you know, you've heard from us sales guys, you know, kind of given the high level, and Pat's going to dive in a little bit deeper. But really, again, at a high level, you know, Absolute is here to make sure that you always know where your devices are, whether they're on your network or off your network. Who has them, what are they doing with them, and gives you the ability to control those devices should there need to be some control, whether that is I want to freeze a machine, delete some data, find out where it is on a geolocation map, and really give you that control capability. Our legacy has been around the device itself, tracking that device, recovering that device if it's lost or stolen. We still do that, and we know that's a problem in the industry today. But what I'm going to point at to do is to dive in a little bit deeper to the other use cases that we can talk about. Certainly that, because we are hearing, you know, districts, and you've talked about this, Chris, are having significant loss rates, even especially the big districts. And we still want to help with that. But there's some other things that we can talk about as well.
Yeah. So Oliver and Pat and I sat through, I sat through a demo. I sat through an overview with Pat this last week. I'm going to post the demo on Pro. I joked about I did what others sometimes don't want to do. I sat through the demo and the spiel to see if it's worthy of, like, hey, this is good stuff. You know, you should listen to it. And it was good. Pat did a great job with showing the dashboards and digging in deeper. And Pat, I wondered if you might talk about that again for our listeners a little more. So we talk about Windows, we talk about Chrome. Okay, there has to be a difference in how this install works between the two devices. Would you just talk a little more technical about how the install works, but then about what you get to see out of each one, or what you can do with a Windows device or a Chrome device if Absolute is doing some management with it?
Absolutely. So let's start by discussing Windows on that side first. And again, what makes us unique? I mean, Warren just kind of laid it out what we are in a nutshell. But again, there's lots of tools that can do what he just described, you know, giving you hardware and software inventory and telling you where the device is and that sort of thing. But again, what makes us unique and then on Windows devices is that we are part of the firmware, and we've been in the firmware for going on decades now. And what that means is that when you activate us on a Windows device, we become persistent. And that means that even if they try to remove our agent or reinstall the OS or swap the hard drive, our agent is going to self-heal. It's going to check in. And anywhere that there's an internet connection, it's on or off your network, you're going to have not only visibility to that device, but to the control over it, like Warren was talking about earlier. So on a Windows device, to get us activated, you're going to run a Microsoft installer file that comes from your particular web console. Any Windows device that you run that on, that will not only get the process started for it to check in with your account, but it also enables that firmware piece, which is actually resident right now on all of your production Windows systems. It will activate that system will check in, and then you will have an unbreakable digital tether to that Windows device. Now, Chrome, we are not part of the firmware on Chrome, but with our solution, we synchronize with your Google Admin console, and we are an extension, which gets pushed out just like any other extension. Between those two mechanisms, we can provide the tracking and some of the features that we'll talk about on the Chrome side. So Chrome, it's just a matter of deploying that extension and setting up that synchronization, which regardless of how many Chrome devices that you have, that can be done in less than 10 minutes to get that set up. So whether it's 50 Chromes or 100,000, you're ready to go that quickly. Windows, it's a matter of getting that Microsoft installer file out to the systems, which can be pushed with any type of client management tool like the Microsoft System Center or other tools that push out Microsoft installer files. And then that starts that process for that machine to be protected as well.
And on Windows, so, I mean, we can freeze the device, we can send messages to the device. Is it called auto heal, or what's the thing that if I have a list of programs that I want to make sure don't get messed with, would you explain that more?
To your question, yes, we call that to self-heal applications because, as I mentioned, we self-heal ourselves. And we keep coming back on the system. But to do that for other applications, we call that application resilience.
Okay.
Our ability to use that same mechanism to actually self-heal other critical third-party applications, like, for example, the Microsoft System Center or other anti-malware tools or VPN or client management tools, other types of security tools, we can not only keep ourselves running and healthy, but also these other applications so that they can do what they're supposed to do to the system.
And I know, like, Can you talk to, because this was a feature I didn't know that Absolute had. There was like social security stuff that it can look at or credit card information stuff. Would you speak to that with that scanning?
Absolutely. So in addition to the features that we've kind of briefly been touching on, being able to keep other critical applications running and healthy, being able to do a freeze on the device, do a data delete, we can also scan the local hard drive and look at the data files and search for particular data patterns, patterns like, as you mentioned, credit card numbers, social security card numbers, personal health care information. These are a few of those categories. And if that type of information is discovered, the system will report back a match score per category, per device in the console. And what this does for you is it gives you visibility across these systems, whether they're on or off the network, as to where you have sensitive data stored and sitting on that local hard drive and where your organization could be at risk, especially if that device were to get outside of your control. This is giving you that visibility to those. And in addition, it's more than just showing this to you, you're able to actually take some actions on it. Our actions might be targeting those files for a data delete, which can make those files forensically unrecoverable. Or maybe we send the user a message to say, could you call us? We've got some questions about some of this, what we're seeing on your hard drive, or freeze the device, or any of the other actions become available. So it is that visibility and control.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I know that's for Windows. I was really thinking through my school district on like my administrative teams, computers. We're starting to for sure get into teacher laptops, a Windows laptop that our teachers are bringing home. Mm-hmm. There's a great use case though still for your desktop computers, but makes a lot of sense in particular with people that have access to sensitive data. That we need to do a better job of tracking and seeing it quickly and then doing something with it if we know that that data is sitting on that computer on that local hard drive.
Correct. And we've actually, unfortunately, it happens, but some of my school customers have actually found student machines that had this kind of data that they had obtained through nefarious means on there. But again, it was visibility. You'd have no idea that this was there, and it can lead to other investigations and defining things. But ultimately, it's so that you can protect yourself.
Yeah. As well. On the Chrome side, so that's an extension that gets installed. Mm-hmm. So that's going to sit on my Google admin domain as a user extension. That's on the Chromebook after the user installs. So could you talk again about what are those features that come with that apply to Chrome?
Yes, I can. So as you're aware, Chrome devices are a lower end device than Windows. I mean, it's basically a browser spawning up from an operating system. So it's a Chrome browser. So what we can do with the Chrome devices is we still track them for their hardware information, for their make, model, serial, and other types of local public IP. We also synchronize with the Google Admin Console, so we're bringing over information that you have in your Google Admin Console into our console for centralized reporting, like it's OU or other custom fields that you might have used. So that is also in one place. We can also geolocate a Chrome device, just like we can a Windows device, meaning you'll know not only the last position of where it was, but we also store the history of the devices. So you can look at where a device has been over a time frame that you specify, like the last 30 days, for example. Now, in the Chrome devices, there's not a concept of looking for sensitive data or doing a data delete. I mean, there's not data locally on a Chrome device. However, you're still able to do a device freeze on the Chrome. And where my school customers see the most value here about our freeze over disabling them in the Google Admin Console is that when you disable a Chrome device in the Google Admin Console, you basically brick it at that point. You cut it off, you get no other information, it's pretty much gone at that point. Yep. The difference that we provide with our device freeze on a Chrome is that it happens after the user logs in. So they log in and our extension then just got your username, your local, your public IP, your geolocation, all the other information that we're gathering, and then the device freezes. So you're unable to use it at that point. So you've still got connectivity to the device and still a way to try to negotiate getting it back or communicating with the user. And even if you didn't want to freeze it, you can still send messages to it, like we talked about earlier, to try to prompt them to ultimately bring it back or tell you what's going on it.
Yeah, we've heard about the schools. I mean, we have lost at our school, but the big schools that lost a bunch of devices, lost a bunch of Chromebooks over COVID, but even after COVID, I mean, it's a thing because we want all kids to have a device all the time. So you issue a device, maybe the kid comes the next day, he lost it. So you issue another one. When we disabled that thing in Google Admin Console, the kid can't log in anymore. So if it's theft or if it's lost or whatever, and it gets found and it simply doesn't work anymore, you're probably not going to get it back, you know, unless that person's just going to reach out to the information you provided on there. But it sounds like with Absolute, like that kid can still log in. So you're going to collect that extra data so you can prove that they still have the device and here's where it was at.
Exactly.
Recovery nice. Might be a little better with Absolute than just the Google Admin Console way.
Correct. And sometimes, I mean, you may, instead of going right to a device freeze, you might start with just messaging
yep.
the device, you know, to prompt, look, are you still using it? How about you use it for the next week? We're going to need it back. You know, here, why don't you call us, you know, talk to her. And then again, freeze is the ultimate way that if we're not getting compliance, this is how we can enforce our wishes.
Right. Okay. I know I talked to Oliver about, you know, pricing. If I just wanted to start with my admin building, I could. If I just wanted to start with, you know, my teachers, my principals, I could. I could do all in and do all my Chromebooks, all my fleet of Windows computers. What should I do if I'm interested in pricing? Is there some special pricing we can look at? Talk to me about pricing, would you?
Yeah, I'll talk to you about that, Chris. You know, again, one of the other unique, you know, relationships that Absolute have is with all the PC OEMs. And part of that's because we're built into the bias of those systems. But the other component is you can actually buy our solution when you're buying a device. So you can
okay.
bundle it into your capital expenditures. And that's typically how most school districts buy us, right? When they have capital expenditure or capital funding, they're buying devices, Absolute gets included to it, like you would your anti-malware or your antivirus or what have you. So that's typically how that works. You know, we can help with pricing. Obviously, I would go back to oschmidt at absolute.com and he can help you with some of that. We don't sell directly, so it would be through whoever you buy your hardware from is usually who we recommend, but it can also be a CDW or an Insider, a PC Connection, or your local bar.
Okay.
All the different places that you can buy it from. One of the problems that we've seen recently, we've got a new pricing promotion coming out, is that, you know, just starting on new devices doesn't solve the problems that you're trying to solve, because this issue is occurring on all of your systems. And we know that with things like ESSER funding going away and budgets being cut, we won't make sure that our districts can cover off all of their devices right out of the gate. So what we've done is as long as you're buying us on new devices, and we do want to tie this with a new device order, we'll protect everything. Now, there's some
awesome.
that we can talk through.
Yep.
But really what we're trying to do is let you use your capital expenditure to cover off, you know, an operational cost that and with funds you may not have. So that was just approved and we are, you know, talking about today, but any district that's, you know, obviously you need to see value in our solution. We want to be able to make sure that we're solving a problem or multiple problems for you, but we want to make sure it's an easier lift to begin with Absolute. And we're doing that by, you know, utilizing funding sources that you have available when some others aren't as available as they used to be.
Great. Great. All right. Well, I don't have anything else unless you guys have anything that I've missed. Have we screwed up these last several episodes? We need to clear the air on anything else.
I thought you guys did a great job. The episodes that I've listened to, you have done a phenomenal job of talking about Absolute.
Okay.
And Chris, I've really enjoyed our partnership. I wish I was in Columbia last, I guess it was a couple weeks back now. But the Olivers did do a good job of that. And yes, we'll keep chanting the Oschmidt email address for us to get back to. And eventually get you to talk to Pat, because if everyone does get a chance to go in and look at the demo that Pat runs through our console, that really shows the power of our solution.
Yep.
And again, I think we sometimes get thought of just for that one use case around loss, which is a big use case, right? There's a lot of districts that just don't know where their stuff is. There's a lot of other things that we're trying to and are doing with education and with our K-12 community, which is a unique world where problems are different than we see with our corporate clients. So yep. We're trying to provide solutions to that. And if there's some things that you're not getting, there's data that you're not getting, as Pat mentioned, that unbreakable tether, we can collect data, any data that you're looking for. So keep us in mind if you're saying, I'm not getting the information I'm looking for, we can help you with that.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I'm going to, again, when we post this episode, that's when I'm going to also post the K-12 Tech Pro, the demo that we did. Pat and Warren were very mindful of my time and of those that are going to watch that video's time. It's pretty much less than 30 minutes, and you kind of see the whole thing. Here's all the Absolute offers. And then there's even those question marks around, hey, can it do this? And they can answer yes, no, for maybe some more data collection or whatever it is that you're needing to do. So check out that demo. Check out Absolute. Thank you, Warren and Pat, for hanging out with me today.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
See you later.
The views and opinions expressed on the K-12 Tech Talk podcast are the personal opinions of Josh, Chris, and Mark, and do not represent the views or opinions of our sponsors or other organizations that we're affiliated with. The material information presented here is for general information and entertainment purposes only. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.